Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 13th. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Simonson moves approval of the minutes dated Monday, April 11th. Are there any changes to them? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. We also have a second set of amendments from Thursday, April 7th, which Representative Mahoney informed me he wanted to move. So, Representative Mahoney.
Amendments or minutes, Mr. Chair?
Minutes.
I would love to move the minutes.
Representative Mahoney moves the minutes from dated Thursday, April 7th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. A couple of housekeeping things. Members of the Majority Caucus, we're going to be meeting at the conclusion of whenever this meeting completes today. I think we're going to be up on the up in 300 or 400, somewhere up there. Representative Mr. Kennedy is going to go around and give us the location, but plan on meeting up there at the completion of this meeting today. In terms of a schedule for the week, in terms of an agenda for the remainder of the week and next week, nonpartisan staff came to me after I offered the 9 a.m. deadline for amendments next Monday and threatened to behead me if I stuck with that schedule. So the tentatively, this is what we're looking at, is getting the omnibus bill released at some point tomorrow. The deadline for amendments would be Friday at 5 p.m. Monday would allow us the opportunity to take public testimony. And if public testimony completes, mark up and take action on the omnibus bill. In the event that public testimony or markup go long, then we will go over to Tuesday and finish up our action on Tuesday. But that's the tentative schedule for now. Obviously, the earlier we can get the bill released on Thursday puts less pressure on our staff for the weekend, allows them to meet that deadline at 5 o'clock on Friday. The later it gets released on Thursday, then it puts us in a difficult spot of having to push back the amendment deadline. So that's the tentative schedule for that. But again, the flexible portion of the schedule is going to be next Monday and Tuesday, where conceivably, if public testimony is completed, if we take up the amendments and we have passage of the bill on Monday, we can do it then. Otherwise, we can finish it by the end of Tuesday. So are there any questions for members of the committee on this? Representative Mahoney, use the mic, please.
Will you be sending out a more detailed kind of schedule so our legislative assistants can put it on our calendars so that we? Otherwise, you're expecting our memories to be this good?
No.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A bad idea.
I think we actually.
I sent it to
several
staff.
Okay, so yeah, so it's gone. So tentatively, we're planning on Monday starting at noon.
We'll post the meeting times as well.
Yep. So that'll be that. So yeah, we'll give it to staff so you know what to do, Representative Mahoney. We'll be on
that. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are we meeting again as a committee this week besides today?
No, we are not.
So if we haven't had bills heard, you would probably advise us to do amendments instead of bills at this point, or seek hearings on those bills, or do amendments?
Well, we're not going to be having any hearings, so the only course of action would be that the bill would not move forward, or a member would offer an amendment.
Okay,
I would just remind members of the committee that if you offer a bill, it has to be in balance with our target. It's very awkward when the chair has to rule an amendment out of order. So presumably, staff and members are smart enough to draft their amendments in a way that are consistent with our finance target. So just. I think it goes without saying, but people should. Mm-hmm. I think there's ways to address that. So, any other questions or comments? All right, Representative Neuberger, we are continuing the conversation that we had on House File 2817. This is the allocation of the emissions credits to those that have been affected by the closure and sort of changes that are taking place in our energy industry. First of all, I do want to allow the opportunity for any additional public testimony, questions, or comments. For members of the committee. So is there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill and share their concerns, thoughts, or pose questions to the committee? Okay, so John Burns does the fake walk up to testimony and leans over to the right. So is there anyone else who is waiting on Mr. Burns? Okay, so all right. So with that, we'll close the public comment portion and we'll move to members' questions and comments. So questions from members of the committee on this bill. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Neuberger, does this bill have a Senate companion?
Representative Neuberger.
Representative Mahoney, it does.
Representative Mahoney.
Then I do have one question. And Representative Neuberger, so the question I have is this another way to take money from people that buy power from Minnesota Power, Great River Power, XL Power, and give it to these small cities? Because my guess is if I call all of those three utilities that I just mentioned, they would tell me that their ratepayers are going to pay this. It's not some mythical stock owner or pallet of money they have on their loading dock. It's going to be their ratepayers, whether it's in my district or in Representative Johnson's, Lumen's, Kwasinski, Jason, So who's paying for this? Who's paying for this?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, that's an excellent question. I would like to go back to what my original statement is I do not support cap and trade. I do not like this program. And the simple answer to your question is that regardless of whether or not this bill of mine gets passed, the ratepayers will be paying for this. If this goes through, if there is a clean power plan with an implementation of a carbon credit trading scheme, then you will see ratepayers paying for this. What my bill does is it basically says is if we're going to be dealt this hand, okay, I don't want this hand, but if we are dealt this hand, that we have no choice, it's going to be paid for by ratepayers anyway, then we're going to take one card out of that hand and we're going to go back to those communities that basically it's their, that got the plug pulled on them in order for this entire scheme to exist in the first place. We're going to go back to those communities and say, you know, we pulled the plug on your economic engine. We're going to allow some assistance here to help you get back on your feet because of a policy-driven decision.
Mr. Representative Mahoney, you did say one question, but go ahead.
No, I was just going to make a comment that, my understanding is that when these kind of things happen, these utilities and the state have set up a bunch of programs for, like, transition aid and excess help to repurpose and rebuild these economic engines. And I've heard you, and I know I've heard members of your caucus complain about double dipping. So it's okay if your community double dips, but it's not okay if everyone else's committee double dips, communities or organizations double dip. You know, that there's a word for that, and that's my comment. I won't mention the words because I'll just get myself in trouble, which I do often.
Well, Representative Mahoney, I think it is...
hypocrisy?
No. It is fair to point out, though, that, I mean, these carbon allowances, if they are ever going to be created, they're going to be paid for by the ratepayers. And it's going to be predominantly paid for by those from outside. No, not at all, actually. To the contrary, it's going to be paid for by those whose current energy sources are disproportionately weighted towards coal and get their energy from North Dakota, which is primarily going to be rural co-ops and rural customers. They're the ones who are going to pay for the allowances. And then those allowances are going to go back to those who sold them, which would be most likely the Xcel Energy Service Territory. And so that's where the money is coming from. Now, whether those allowances are allocated the way Representative Neuberger says or another way, there's a very important distinction. And we heard from the department, we heard from the executive branch, they feel that they can allocate these allowances without legislative approval with a broad area of discretion. Whether that goes to the utilities that and the ratepayers who made those investments to reduce carbon dioxide, or whether it's nonprofit groups or affiliated groups, they're being very honest with us that they say we don't need any legislative approval to do this stuff. And so I think Representative Neuberger and many of us find ourselves in a catch-22 with a program we don't like. But if it's going to exist, I think that the people who paid for the pollution mitigation are the ones who should get the credit back on the allowances. But the flip side is we have an executive branch that feels that if this program goes into effect, they don't really need to listen to you or I. I mean, we can show up at the public testimony like everyone else, but the authority resides with one individual. And that's problematic. And that's an issue that we have to figure out. And I suspect when policies are made through rule, you may find it advantageous right now to be from one side of the aisle, but we know that in 2018 there's going to be a new governor, and that new governor may have different ideas about how to allocate them. And maybe the new governor is going to say, take the allowances and give them to the Koch brothers. I don't know. Right? Right? But, I mean, what we're hearing from the executive branch is a governor would have the authority to do that. And I don't agree with that. I think it's wrong. But all of this is a lot of uncertainty until we find out who the next new president's going to be and who the ninth justice of the Supreme Court's going to be. And then we're going to have at least a little bit more clarity. So, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to the point in the conversation that's taking place, you're exactly right. The people who are disproportionately affected by an implementation of the Clean Power Plan are the people that get their power from North Dakota, which is a huge part of rural Minnesota. We've had a lot of discussions. I was on Minnesota Public Radio with the minority leader early in the session, and talking about what's going on in rural Minnesota versus metro and kind of that metro versus rural thing, which I particularly don't really like to address it that way, but that's the way the radio person was addressing it. And one of the issues that I raised is what's going to happen to electric rates in rural Minnesota. They are going to go through the roof. And I've heard from people over and over and over again their concern for electric rates. I don't hear that same concern, for whatever reason, in the areas that are served by XL. And I don't know if that's a part of what they've done leading up to all this or what, but in rural Minnesota, this is a huge concern. It impacts our schools, our nursing homes, our businesses, large and small, homeowners, farms. And I signed on to Representative Neuberger's bill because I see this as just one way of maybe trying to slow some of that stuff down and empowering rural Minnesota and not putting them at so much of a disadvantage. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Gunther, Portman, Scott, and then Wagenius. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask a couple questions to Commissioner Thornton.
Commissioner Thornton, are you here? Yes.
Yes.
Come on down.
It's good to see him again. Mr. Thornton, Minnesota's been very proactive in our renewable goals, and I remember I was on the conference committee for 10 by 10, and that was a long time ago. And we would have reached that by 10 years, and I think it was a good goal. But now we got 25 by 25, and we have steadily tried to reach that. I think we're getting closer. I don't know if we're there, but we got to be heading that direction in time. And Minnesota has been very proactive, but yet the federal government decided that we have a higher goal than other states that haven't been as proactive as we have. Why is that the way we have to go? Why do we have to be penalized for being good?
And just to be clear, Commissioner, when Representative Gunther was referring to 10 by 10, he was referring to one of his first bills to allow that 10% of Minnesota have electricity by 1910.
So I am old, but not that old. You got to remember, he's got a mafia coat on today.
Oh, jeez.
Bipartisan agreement on that.
Garofalo family has many friends representing. Yes. So back on to the question, and I apologize for derailing that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, when EPA came out with a draft rule a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years ago, And there were some big discrepancies between the targets that were assigned to each state, and Minnesota's target was considerably greater than a lot of other states. They took comment on that. We commented on that point in particular. And then in June of 2015, they came out with their final rule. and they adjusted the numbers so that our target is more in line with what everybody else has. So it's there's not as much of a discrepancy as there used to be. And we're still working on our analysis of how this would impact Minnesota and what would need to be done in order to comply with those targets. But from what we can tell, we're pretty close to being on track to complying with them, in part because of the renewable energy standard that we have in Minnesota and the fact that we're going to be actually projected to well exceed the 25% by 2025, and because of the renewable energy, the energy efficiency efforts that have been underway, that were also a part of the Next Generation Energy Act, and some of the air pollution control measures that Minnesota Power and Xcel Energy have been implementing over the last few years. So we're in pretty good shape. We're going to be really close to the target without doing anything more than what's already happening.
Representative Kendler.
I agree, and I know Minnesota's been very good, and we're dedicated to getting renewables and clean energy. I appreciate that. But at the same time, the cost of all doing this has been the ratepayers. Because every time we put a mandate on a power company, I believe according to law, they have the right to recover that with rate increases. And on top of that, they got a right to recover that with rate increases plus a profit. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, there are some situations in statute that do allow the utilities to get recovery without going through a rate case for certain types of pollution control things. And that's the mechanism that both Xcel Energy and Minnesota Power have used to make some major emission reductions in the last 10 years.
Representative Gunther.
Do you believe that this could be one of the reasons that Minnesota's gone from the 12th lowest utility paying state to the 33rd highest?
Mr. Thornton.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not really qualified to be able to answer that. There's other folks here that might be able to.
Well,
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Thornton, what else happened during that period of time to make us go from the 12th to the 33rd?
Mr. Commissioner Thornton.
Mr. Chairman, you need to talk to the energy people. They have a better handle on those kind of things.
I have done that, by the way.
Are you familiar with the Clean Energy Incentive Program?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am, sort of. I can possibly try to answer some questions if you have any.
You know, and first of all, I have to tell you are being put in a very difficult spot on this. I just want to comment on that. I appreciate the fact that you actually answer the questions the best you can. And since the beginning, this is a very controversial piece of legislation. There's a huge amount of uncertainty. Some people may try to break this down as just being a balance between affordability and the environment, but it's so much more of a complicated issue. And I know that you don't make these decisions unilaterally, so I want to say that up front. Just thank you. Even when we were up in Becker, you sat there, you showed up, you testified, so just thank you for that, because I feel like sometimes when we ask these tough questions, we don't actually acknowledge and thank those who actually go through the trouble of answering them. But if you could just cover what the Clean Energy Incentive Program is, just explain that to members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, the Clean Energy Incentive Program is something that EPA added into the Clean Power Plan that if a utility begins certain kinds of projects to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions before the initial compliance period, which begins in 2022, they'll get extra allowances or extra credit for the reductions that they make in that period of time. And some of those kinds of projects could be new renewable energy projects. Another area that is specifically identified by EPA is energy efficiency projects in low-income communities. There are a lot of the details about this program are fairly cloudy at this point. And it's one of the things that states need EPA to put some more clarity to before we can be more specific about the kinds of projects and things that might apply. But it is something that a lot of people have expressed interest in, and it's something that we'll be looking at.
Commissioner, can you explain the interaction of that program with the allowances that we're discussing today. Explain the interaction between those two.
I'll do my very best, Mr. Chairman. As I remember, EPA has the allowances that would come to the state are separate from the allowances, the extra credits that would be given as a part of the Clean Energy Incentive Program. So this would be above and beyond all that. So, for example, a utility could that has a compliance obligation under this program could undertake projects between now and 2022 that would qualify for extra allowances. So in addition to the allocation that they would get some extra allowances to help them meet their compliance obligations.
And the allocation of those allowances, does the executive branch view the allocation of the Clean Energy Incentive Program allowances the same way they do the other allowances, that it's there's no legislative action needed for that, that you guys can allocate those within certain confines as you see fit?
I'm thinking really hard, Mr. Chairman. We haven't really gotten that deep into thinking about the Clean Energy Incentive Program. I think that what would most likely be a path there is that we would identify in rule the kinds of projects that would qualify for, based on some guidelines that EPA sets, the kind of programs that would qualify for the Clean Energy Incentive Program, and I believe then EPA would award the extra allowances and not us.
Okay. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question about your jacket. No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Chair, so on Monday I understood you to say that President Obama created pallets of money in Minnesota with his action in this regard. Is that your testimony?
Representative Portman, well, first of all, I didn't testify. I made a statement. But second of all, what is happening is the government, through its action, is creating an instrument of value. And what I mean by that is right now, if a utility were to engage in actions, as Xcel, let's say, has, Xcel converted many of their a couple of their coal-fired power plants to converted those to natural gas. As a result of that action, that resulted in significant CO2 reductions. Now, there are environmental benefits, particulate matter benefits, but there is no mechanism to monetize the value of that, you know, thousand or a ton of CO2 reductions. By the rules that President Obama has gone forward with and are currently stayed as a result of the Supreme Court action, that action now has become an instrument of value. It's become there's a potential for it to be a tradable commodity. And so this is government creating value out of something which previously the market had not had value. The value is coming from government action. It's not coming from the marketplace or from a bushel of soybeans, a bushel of corn, a barrel of oil. Those have value in the marketplace. So this is an instrument of value that's coming from the government being created. And the concern is that when government is creating that instrument of value, now, and I use it as an analogy to be pallets of money, okay, government has created this value. It's sitting on a warehouse dock, palletized $100 bills. Where does it go? Does the government use that to fund their operating budgets, as the state of California does with its cardboard, where it actually has a financial incentive to drive up its emissions costs because that means more funding for the government? Does it do it that way? Does it give it to nonprofits? Does it give it to certain preferred entities? And right now, the testimony we're hearing from the executive branch is they don't feel they need any legislative action to allocate those allowances. And we're talking potentially hundreds of millions of dollars, Representative Hortman. And if this legislature decides we don't want to do nothing and we're going to let this governor allocate that, keep in mind the Clean Power Plan, even in a best-case scenario for those who support it, it's going to be stayed till the end of 2017. And the actual implementation and deadlines are going to occur far beyond when this governor leaves office. And so if we give that authority to this governor, you're not just giving it to Mark Dayton, you're giving it to whoever the next governor is going to be. And, you know, Representative Baker is a pretty popular guy. Do you want Governor Baker deciding these happen unilaterally? I don't know. So Representative Hortman. So yes, pallets of money, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I knew I was at some risk of inciting a lecture if I asked my question, but
was it a lecture? I'm sorry.
you know, it's a federal law. It's not an executive order.
It's not a set of rules.
It's a Clean Air Act. It's Section 111D. There's really, it's kind of like Social Security. We don't get to decide at the state level whether we're going to comply with federal law or not. Federal law exists.
It's a rule, Representative Hortman. It's different than law. That's why there's uncertainty, because the next president can make it disappear. He or she can't do that with a law.
Rules come pursuant to statutory authority, but we can argue about the law another time. I wanted to ask Representative Neuberger how old Sherco 1 is, how old is Sherco 2, and what is the usual customary life of a coal plant? And then also, what is the dollar value that you're talking about in your bill of moving around? What's 10% of what?
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Which of your five questions would you like me to answer?
You can take them in order.
How old is Sherco 1? Sherco 1 was built, I believe, in 1972. Its initial retirement date, they give it about a 40 to 50-year lifespan. Sherco 2 was built a couple of years after that. I believe it was built 73 or 74 in that area. Sherco 3 was built in the mid-1980s. That was question number 1, 2, and 3. You wanted to know the monetized value of these allowances. That is to be determined strictly between the EPA and then also, I'll use their own letters, words here. It says here, the EPA must ensure that when finalizing model rules in the federal plan, it supports to the greatest extent possible a robust and liquid trading market. As proposed by the model rule, state trading ready plans must use an EPA-administered tracking system. So the EPA is going to become some kind of a fiat commodity market trading system administrator. All of this points towards a commodity, which we're going to call carbon, and how this new commodity is going to be valued is for the future to determine. I can't sit here and give you a concrete answer. These allowances might be worth a buck. They might be worth $1 million. Right now, I don't know. That was your fourth question. Your fifth question, sorry, I'm getting old. What was it?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger, I think that you answered all the questions that I asked, or at least all the questions I can remember that I asked. Representative Neuberger, is if we have no idea how much the allowances will be worth, mm-hmm. and you're proposing that 10% of them be allocated amongst the communities in Minnesota that lose a power plant, which they may or may not have lost due to them aging out, do you have any idea what the return is that we would be providing to Becker? I mean, are they losing $3 million a year in property taxes, and we're going to give them $16 million a year or $25 million a year? Do you have any sort of comparator so we know what we're doing with this legislation?
Representative Neuberger?
Well, that's a really good question. And again, that was more than one question. I think I counted four inside of those. So you're really stretching my memory today. Good for you. First and foremost, how much will the city of Becker lose? Right now, the city of Becker derives, I would like to say, about 65% of its property tax base from the power plant. The city of Becker gets no LGA, none at all, because we get money from the power plant. How much will this turn out to be for the city of Becker? I can't answer that question, but I will do this. In looking at my bill, because this is a work in progress, I'm starting to ask the question myself is, instead of focusing on cities and townships, you'll probably see as this moves forward the language change to counties, because not everyone who works at this plant lives in the city of Becker. However, 90% of them would live within Sherbourne County. That's a discussion that I would welcome you to the table to try to figure this out, because you know this is going to be a real issue. And these pallets of money are going to come from the ratepayers. I'm going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it. Representative Matitza is going to pay for it. You know, that's how that works. And regardless, this is going to come out of our pockets whether we like it or not. And again, I'm going back to what I said. All I'm trying to do is to say, if this is going to happen, which I don't agree with, then part of it should go back to the communities and to the workers who are paying the ultimate price for this.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger, is there any credence to the idea that the allowances belong to the utilities that paid to take actions to create them, and that it's the utilities and therefore all ratepayers that should benefit from whatever trading occurs.
Representative Neuberger.
I don't think I have the right to answer that. I think that's a subjective question. You're asking me, do I think that the utilities should own these credits and be the sole owners only? I don't know at this time if I can answer that, but I do know that in the MPCA and the Minnesota Department of Commerce's own letters here, that they do support some set-asides for clean power incentive programs and also for low-income communities. They've already determined that that would be part of their plan, that they're going to take some of these out. So for me to sit here, or for someone to say that I'm only supporting set-asides for affected communities and disaffected workers is not true, because the language within these letters clearly indicates that there are going to be set-asides for different programs. One of them is going to be, in their own words, a catalyst for behavioral change. I find that interesting that they're going to be using some of these credits. How will that come about? And to me, I think that they'll probably hire some nonprofits to be catalysts for behavioral change.
Representative Fortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Neuberger, do you know where the utilities of the state are on your bill, for or against?
Representative Neuberger.
I met with six of the major utilities before this bill came forward, and their position was is that they don't support this bill because they don't support any extra set-asides for any reason, period.
Representative Hartman. Thank you. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had some questions for Mr. Thorson.
Thornton.
Thornton, sorry.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, what is the MPCA doing right now to move forward with the Clean Power Plan, the compliance with that?
Commissioner Thornton.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, we have an active stakeholder group that has we've had about 150 people participating in each of the meetings, and right now we're focusing on reviewing some modeling that has been done by a number of organizations around the country, including MISO as one of them, the Electric Power Research Institute, and others who are using large utility dispatch models to try to simulate what might need to happen in order to comply with the Clean Power Plan. So we're reviewing all of that information with our stakeholders just to see what needs to what additional measures need to happen in Minnesota, what additional measures need to happen in North Dakota, and then try to project what the cost might be.
Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Do you think moving forward with this kind of work is in violation of the Supreme Court's stay on moving forward with the Clean Power Plan?
Commissioner Thornton.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, we don't think we don't think it has anything to do with the stay. We're assuming that that at some point the courts are going to rule on this, and we believe that they'll probably rule favorably to EPA, and we want to be as prepared as possible to move forward in the time frame that's given to us. So we believe that continuing to meet and talk about it is a worthwhile endeavor.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Thornton, wasn't there a report due to the legislature for March 15th, kind of a draft plan?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Thornton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, committee members, yes, there was. We submitted something on March 15th. It's not a plan because we don't have a plan put together yet. We explained the process that we were involved in and how far along we were in meeting with stakeholders and that sort of thing, and the stay that has resulted in the court cases.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
And thank you. How much money would you say that the department or the MPCA has spent since the beginning of the year on moving towards the Clean Power Plan?
Commissioner Thornton.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I don't know. We haven't figured it back to the beginning of the year, but we have responded to some questions that we've received about this. The actual cost of the listening sessions that we had around the state was around $3,200 in material costs. At the time, we've been, or right now, we have roughly 3.3 FTEs working on the power plan. If you extrapolate that out to a calendar year, that would be a little over $300,000 in salary. It's not possible for us to predict exactly how much effort we're going to be putting into this over the next year. The stay has obviously slowed down some development of materials that are crucial for continuing to meet and talk on this, but conceivably that would be a ballpark amount of what this would cost to keep moving.
One last question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And under what authority has the department been given, where does the authority come from to spend the money for you folks?
Mr. Chairman, from our appropriation from this biennium.
Thank you.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my first question will be to perhaps Mr. Eliff. I'm thinking about the Tack Harbor plant up on the North Shore, which I think is it's either Silver Bay or Schroeder. I can't remember which, but
Silver Bay, Schroeder.
When I look at the language, and I'm going to direct you to line 1.16, and it talks about the allocation in cities and towns where we have a coal-fired electric generating plant that has ceased operations. Can you walk me through this? Because in the case of Tack Harbor, I know that Minnesota Power announced earlier, it was either last year or early this year, that they were going to be shutting down that facility, that plant. But in the event that they had said that we are going to convert that plant to, say, a natural gas electricity generating plant, under this language, can you tell me what the difference would be if we had a situation where Tack Harbor was going to convert to natural gas? Would they then not be excluded from this, in your mind?
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simonson, reading the language on lines 115 and 116, it would seem to me that we're talking about cities and towns in which a coal-fired electric generating plant has ceased operation. If that plant is converted to natural gas, it would seem to me the coal-fired electric generating plant has still ceased operation.
Representative Simonson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Eloff, so, and thank you for that. That makes some sense to me. So now I'm going to shift gears over to the Sherco plant. And we know that there is three units there, one, two, and three, I guess. And it looks like, we're told at least that one and two will be coming offline and more than likely replaced with some sort of a natural gas plant. But unit three will not be coming offline, at least that's my understanding. So in that particular case, coal-fired plant is still in operation, even though we took two of the three units offline?
Mr. Eloff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, now we're coming down to, does the definition of plant mean the individual coal-fired unit or not? My off-the-cuff, non-legal opinion would be to look at each individual unit rather than the plant as a whole.
Representative Simons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And last question for you, Mr. Eloff. Further down on that same page, when it references the fact that the commission will have to make a determination under this language, and it lists four things that they'll have to consider. With respect to item one, to what extent do we have the ability to determine What if, you know, what the impact of the Clean Power Plan was on the determination to shut down that plant or that portion of the plant. I mean, in this case, we're talking about Xcel, who announced, you know, late last year that they were going to do this, and that was certainly well before the PCA made any decision on with respect to the Clean Power Plan. So I suppose the argument could be made that these retirements were the a direct result of the fact that they were age ready to retire anyway. But my specific question is, what weight do these four things have for the commission to consider? What weight will that carry in terms of whether they allocate or whether they don't?
Mr. Eliff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simonson, the language as drafted doesn't indicate a weight for any of the four factors, so it would be up to the commission to assign weights to information as it came to them that they thought was most important in making that decision.
Representative Simonson.
So, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, so what I'm trying to point out here is that there's a concept in here, and I totally respect Representative Neuberger and what he's trying to do and accomplish, but I think that this is way before its prime time, if for no other reason than some of the language in here is questionable at best. We don't know what the commission is going to consider in terms of how they're going to apply, you know, weights to these individual pieces. And perhaps if we're going to put this into law, we should assign that, because in the event or in the example of Xcel in this particular case, they could come forward and say, you know what, the Clean Power Plan had nothing to do with our decision to shut down 1 and 2. That's entirely possible. I don't know what they say. They could go on to item 2 and say there was no remaining useful life of that particular electric generating plant. So I'm just wondering, and my last question, Representative Neuberger, would be for you, but we've talked and some of the other folks have asked a question, and I won't ask it again, but my last question is talking about the monetary value of these allowances, which we don't know yet, and you've testified to that. But once the community does receive an allowance, you know, they go through this process and the commission makes the decision and they allocate these allowances, what do the communities do with it? I mean, is there an actual market that they can sell them?
Representative Neuberger.
The communities would take these allowances, and yes, there would be a market that's created. It would be administrated by the EPA, as I've demonstrated in this document. The cash value of these allowances would go towards the community's discretion as to where they need the economic boost the most. Did the school district just take an enormous hit because 75 homes or 75 families just up and left because they don't have jobs there anymore? Will it supplement the police department? Will it supplement the fire department? Will it go to the EDA? Will it also go towards incentives to bring new industry in? What this is a helping hand to all of these communities in order to help them transition from a coal-based economy to a zero economy. And then also, I just wanted to clarify one point, because I was wrong when I answered Melissa Representative Hortman's question. There, I said, did you hear that? I said I was wrong. It's on record. When I said that it was 40 years, I was incorrect. It was 2040 was the scheduled. That's one of the documents, one of the early documents that I read for the retirement date for the Sherco units. Most of your coal power plants are scheduled to go anywhere from 50 to 75 years. And the Sherco units in the documentation that I read put them out to 2040. But it's getting towards where will this money go? It'll go to where those communities are going to need the best hand up, best help to get their economies going again. Again, like I said, I would anticipate it would go towards short-term expenses and then also long-term investment to get in, or to get new businesses and job providers out there.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Neuberger, for that. And I'm not going to belabor the point any longer, but I just think that this is a little bit premature. I certainly am sympathetic of the fact that as Minnesota and, frankly, the rest of the country transitions towards a cleaner energy and trying to address the real problem of accelerated climate change, that with that change comes some cost. And I totally understand that, and I'm also a big supporter that as we make this transition, that we as a state need to invest in new economic development opportunities in many of these communities that are going to be affected. But I'm just not convinced that this is the best way to do it. Just a comment.
Representative Simonson, I just want to understand where kind of where the DFL members are on this, because I think there's two different arguments against this. One of this would be that Representative Neuberger's allocation of these, or where he's sending the money, is not the where the money should go. And there's another argument that says the legislature should have no role in the allocation of these allowances, that the executive branch is right in making this determination for us. Is that a, would your concerns be with point number one or point number two?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You've never asked me a question.
No, I'm genuinely, because I have my reasons for having concerns about this, but I really want to know what people think about this to find out where we should go with this.
My concerns are honestly with probably more point number one, to be truthful.
Okay.
I mean, I think that there's an opportunity, if the town of or the city of Becker is negatively impacted by closing down the coal plant, and I will be the first to say that we need to do that, we need to make that transition. But at the same time, I'll tell you that I'm more than willing to look at ways to invest in new economic development opportunities in the city of Becker, for whatever that's worth.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a some questions for Mr. Thornton, if he can come back down.
He keeps trying to move to different seats, thinking that people aren't going to ask him questions. So. Commissioner Thornton. Yeah, it's not working. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Thornton, we're past the deadline for reporting back the results of the input that your department was going to gather. I guess I'm going to ask the question, why wasn't it done? Why wasn't it completed?
Why wasn't what done, Representative Luna?
Pardon me?
Why wasn't what done?
They were going to report back to it. We're past the deadline reporting back for the input on what to do with the on this bill. He had mentioned on Representative Scott's question yesterday, he had said he wanted to wait on this because they were gathering input. And I was under the understanding that the department was going to report back findings on this. They were going to do research on this, and you had said that you had submitted something. I believe that's how you worded it. And I was just wondering why it wasn't completed by now.
So why don't we have a draft plan?
Yes. Right. Mr. Chairman, committee members, last session the legislature passed some language that required us to report back on our draft plan to the legislature on March 15th. At that point in time, the Clean Power Plan was a draft regulation. And we would have had to come forward with a final and submit a final plan to EPA by this coming September. After the session was over, EPA came out with their final rule, and they added extra time onto the timeline, and quite frankly, they added more complexity into the regulation itself by changing a whole bunch of things up. So the time frame changed, and we have not completed our analysis and our review of things. We are still seeking input from people, and it's quite frankly going to be months and months before we have a framework of a draft plan.
Representative Luna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one final question. When the court ruled on the EPA, what does the department think the intent of that ruling was? You guys are proceeding yet. What do you think they were going for when they made that ruling?
Mr. Thornton.
Well, I don't have any idea, Mr. Chairman, what the Supreme Court members were thinking, but the effect of it is that EPA can't enforce it. So the first thing that comes up that EPA can't do is make states submit a plan this coming September. And so we do not plan to submit a plan this coming September. What we're doing in the interim, while we have more time to think about it and avail ourselves of the analysis that a lot of smart people around the country are doing, is we're continuing to analyze the situation and get input from everywhere we can.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your question, I have a whole nother answer. But before I go there, I will just tell the DFL members that I was able to reserve a room to talk about plans for your omnibus bill at 2 o'clock today, and I couldn't get any other time. So, and that's in room 272, members, not any other room, 272 at 2 o'clock. You asked a question about what I have a concern with this bill. I have a lot of concerns with this bill. One of my first concerns is that we have a whole bunch of other things that we should be working on or not. This bill will not get through the Senate. I don't have any reason why we're spending 2.5 hours or 3 hours on this particular bill. If you really wanted to get a bill through, you would have worked with the Department of Employment and Economic Development on a real plan that actually would take some of these dollars and have that run through the state so the executive board, the executive branch, which will have some input into this, would have input into this. You would eliminate double dipping. You would eliminate some of the other programs that are out there that help a property-rich district like Becker versus a property-poor district like Representative Fabian's area. Hey, you know, there's all sorts of things wrong with this. But members, I'm done with this bill. It doesn't have a path forward. I don't see it as a path forward. I can't imagine the governor would allow it. And it's kind of like, you know, putting $17 million into broadband on the next biennium where you have absolutely no control on what that money, if that money is going to be there or not. So I think this is just an exercise in blowing hot air out into the particular committee room.
Representative Mahoney, did you see who the chief author of the Senate file is?
I don't really care who the chief author of the Senate file
is. Chairman Tomasoni. Did you see who a co-sponsor on the Senate file is? It's Majority Leader Bach.
Mm-hmm.
So any predictions of the demise of this bill, I would say, are greatly over-exaggerated and early at best.
Your opinion, Mr. Chair. I can have mine.
Sure, but, I mean, when the Majority Leader of the Senate co-sponsors the bill and the chairman of a finance committee and the Senate's the chief author of it, and it's being heard in this committee, I think it's a little early to be clearing something dead. I have concerns with this bill, too, but stranger things have fallen out of the sky in conference committee, Representative Mahoney, and you and I both know that.
I'm not going there.
Serious question, though, Representative Mahoney. The same one for asked Representative Simonson, and that is, I understand there's, like, disagreements about the contents of this and where Representative Neuberger is allocating this money, but do DFL members have the concern about the executive branch allocating the allowances? Do they feel the legislative branch should be involved in this, or are they comfortable with the executive branch making that decision?
Mr. Chair, I've not had that particular discussion with the members of the committee on the DFL side. I have concerns, but I don't have the same concerns that you do, and there are ways that if we actually work together and work together with the executive branch, we could address those, but I don't know that the executive branch has been involved in this particular bill. And I know we have certainly not been involved in this particular bill. No one's asked me about it other than right here.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We usually live kind of in a fact-free zone here in the legislature, which is frustrating for a person coming out of the legal background where you actually have to prove the things that you say. So every once in a while when I get a little information to inject into the fact-free zone, I think it might be useful. I like to pass it along. And Representative Gunther, you might want to know that today the CEO of Xcel Energy is very pleased that his utility has been named the number one wind utility in the country for the 12th year in a row. And he also noted that wind is the cheapest energy they can put on the system right now despite historic low natural gas prices. And I'll send you the link to the press release that just came out during this hearing.
Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Wagenius. My apologies.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the hearing because we're operating off of some assumptions and I don't know some of the basic facts. So, and I don't know whether this is for you because you are bringing it up or for Mr. Thornton, but how much do Minnesota utilities spend right now to import coal to make electricity or to import electricity made from coal? What's the dollar we're talking about here?
I do not know the answer off the top of my head. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Commissioner Thornton does not have that number memorized, but I see Mr. Grant is here. Maybe we could Does Mr. Grant have that number memorized? He's shaking his head. He thinks he knows, but maybe he'll get back to us on that. So, Representative Wagenius, myself, Commissioner Thornton, and Commissioner Grant, neither of us have that number off the top of our head.
Well, it seems to me we have to understand that kind of basic number first, because we are sending money outside of Minnesota to another state. And that, so when money is circulated in other states, that helps them. And this bill obviously helps North Dakota and Wyoming. So I want to understand.
How does it help North Dakota and Wyoming, Representative Wagenius?
Because that's where we buy our coal from.
But how does this help them?
Well, let's get into the number first.
Sure,
and then,
okay.
Let's understand what is, I mean, we. This is a pretty basic question, and I don't want to get distracted from it.
Sure.
How much money do our utilities spend importing coal to make electricity, or how much, and I guess, how much money do we spend importing electricity made from coal? That's pretty basic to our whole discussion here.
But we can't frack the measles.
I do not know that number, Representative Wagenius. I don't understand why it's relevant to the conversation, but I don't know that number. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to offer the answer to that question, Representative Wagenius? Otherwise, we could have the department look into that and get back to us. But Representative Wagenius, you can kind of, you could explain to members why that is relevant to this conversation.
Well, people are assuming there are going to be a lot of coal-fired power plants shutting down. I don't make that assumption, but that is the, one of the assumptions this whole thing is premised on, and we started with that assumption. So I'm kind of going back to the beginning of our conversation and trying to figure out if that assumption is correct, not correct, and I can't do that without understanding this in particular, and especially now that Representative Portman has brought up how cheap wind is. So that's, we need to understand our assumptions, and I'm lost here.
Okay, did you have a question for anybody?
Yeah, that was my question, and we don't have an answer to it.
So you'd like us to have the department get back to you with those numbers? And can you just restate the question so the department knows what we're asking for here and they can get back to the committee?
Okay. How much do Minnesota utilities right now spend to import coal to make electricity, and how much do they spend on importing electricity that is made from coal? I think that covers the waterfront.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Neuberger, any closing comments?
Members, thank you for your time and your questions and your consideration. I appreciate your support on this bill. There's a lot of good things in it. Does it have a ways to go? Yeah, it does. But we need to have this conversation, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, Representative Neuberger renews his motion to have 2817 as amended laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Mahoney, your members, you want to re-announce to your members where you're going?
Mr. Chair, thank you. The DFL members will meet immediately in room 272 by the leadership corner.
GOP members will be going up to 400 South. It will not be long, but please get up there. The sooner we get up there, the quicker we can wrap up. With that, any other questions for the committee? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.